You're listening to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I am your host, Alex Gramatsky, and today I'm going to be talking to Chris Malaver, who has a lot of banking experience, having started at institutions like Scotiabank, PNC, and worked at Citi, and now is currently the vice president of Goldman Sachs, a company that many of us should be familiar with. So thank you for being on today.
Hey, Alex, thanks so much for making time to talk with me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on, and I want to dive right into your career because Goldman Sachs is a very reputable, well-known company around the world. You're a VP over there. I understand you spent quite a bit of time in the banking world, but why don't you get started and share with me a little bit about your background so our listeners can get to know you as well.
Sure. All right. So I guess the headline item is recently I started with Goldman. I'm a vice president in the risk division. I started up in January, but this represents the latest firm here in the United States that I've worked with. As you probably can hear, I am not necessarily from the States originally. I was born in Jamaica. I moved to the States in 2006. And prior to moving to the States, I was working with a Canadian bank in Jamaica, the Bank of Nova Scotia. Started with them as a teller. Worked with them from the early 90s right through until 2006, when I made a decision that I was going to do an MBA. Moved from Jamaica, went to the cornfields of Illinois, did my MBA at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. And after the MBA was done, Scotiabank approached me and I ended up working with them in their Chicago office and then ultimately moved from Chicago to Houston, where I lived right up until 2024 when I had just moved to Dallas. After Scotiabank, I moved to a Spanish bank, BBVA, and then from BBVA, I moved over to Citigroup. I did a one-year stint with Citigroup, and that's where I was before I moved over to Goldman.
Well, thank you for sharing that little bit of background. That's really cool to hear your story starting from Jamaica. And I know Scotiabank because I used to live in Canada, so it's one of the bigger banks over there. So very neat to hear that your banking route started with the Canadian banks in Jamaica. It makes you quite international. And now you're at an American bank in the U.S. That's quite interesting. And you said you're involved in the risk department, if I heard that right, at Goldman. What exactly does that mean?
Right. So risk management, you'll appreciate, is top of mind for every single financial services firm across the planet. And Goldman has been building out its capabilities. My specific function with them right now is risk review, and that is across the entire Goldman ecosystem. I go in and I look at deals that have already been booked and make an assessment about adherence to policy, regulatory alignment. And where necessary and where possible, we make recommendations on enhancements that need to be made to make structuring more robust, to make there be better alignment with the risk appetite of the firm. Also to incorporate what we may view as macroeconomic risk that exists. The primary focus, as I emphasize, is on the credit risk side, but there are elements of op risk that may come in. So all of that is just part of the broader focus on management of risk in an increasingly risky world.
Thank you for explaining that. That seems very detailed from that side of things. So I want to get a little bit into the details as to, you look at something and it seems like it's too risky. Since it's deals that have already been done, I'm assuming you can't change them, or is that then you have to divest of them, or is it more like, hey, we've acknowledged and based on this higher risk, we now therefore have to offset it with some lower risk stuff in the future? Or what happens when you identify something outside of the risk scope?
Yeah, so where an assessment is made around a specific transaction or a specific client, what we do is that we tend to make adjustments internally. That may be in terms the adjustments we make maybe the sort of capital allocation that we believe needs to be applied for a specific type of deal. There may be recommendations on broader policy changes that need to be implemented. It's very unlikely that we're going to say, hey, we can't do this business going forward because, as you mentioned, it's already booked. But there may be additional controls that are encouraged, and those would be conversations that we typically have with the first line of business or the second line. Now, you're hearing me mention first and second line, and that sort of architecture is something that you probably will hear described across the entire financial services sector. I guess coming out of 2008 with the and more recently too with even the community banking challenges that have emerged, you may see more and more banks adopting that sort of architecture. So first line tends to be the individuals or divisions that are having primary contact with clients. Second line tends to be the decision makers, the portfolio managers. And where I fall is that I tend to be just after the second line. The conversations will be across the entire lines of responsibility, and we'll probably make decisions based on what the risk is looking like and whether or not there are regulatory impacts. And regulations represents one of the big elements here because you may see in parts of the financial press, for example, reports about the Fed going in and making recommendations for how risk should be managed in specific firms. So the regulatory environment is a crucial element.
Thank you for explaining that. And some things that you touched on that not everyone might be aware of, it would be great to actually dive into. What exactly is it that Goldman does that you're involved in? Because, you just mentioned clients. Does clients mean people whose money you're taking and then you're deciding what it should be invested into? Or does client mean, you're sourcing deals where you're going to be the investment bank and then you're going to try to see who wants to allocate into this offering? Can you expand a little bit on that?
A short answer would be all of the above. You can appreciate that Goldman is a very broadly diversified firm. We are primarily focused on corporate. And so in doing the transactions with specific institutions, we are essentially providing services to all types of corporate entities, right? So it could be a Fortune 500, it could be a Fortune 100, it could be a Fortune 1000, right? Separately, there is provision of services to high net worth individuals, and that is done in a separate division. But where those transactions are done, the intermediation may be of different forms. It may be direct money management. It may be facilitation of investments in other firms through, say, let's say that individual wants to buy a firm and we are offering M&A advisory. Now, there are some things I probably can't get into significant amount of detail around, but given Goldman's public profile, I'm sure you can appreciate what sorts of transactions they would be doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So client though for you means mostly then I want to say corporate clients and advising them maybe on how they should potentially look at allocating their capital or what they should be investing into, what opportunities exist.
Well, for me, my client primarily is internal, right? So I am supporting the individuals and teams of individuals that are out there making the direct interactions. With that said, we all view the customer that is at the very first line as our client. For me, well, let me say it this way. My client is in internal. but the clients that my internal clients support tend to be corporations and institutions.
Interesting. And then a big part of it is the investment banking side, from how I at least see Goldman. What are some risks that you would think about when it comes to, hey, are we going to participate in this transaction or not? I would assume, you know, you find a buyer, you get a fee, and probably oversimplifying it. But how do you see risk from that perspective when it comes to taking on new clients and running the book, so to speak?
So from the investment banking side, I guess the primary thing that, a lot of what we do there may be put into, say, the M&A business, and that tends to be, M&A right now is I guess, coming into us, it's about to start ramping up after a relatively slow period. In looking at risks for transactions in that space, it tends to match a lot of what you probably hear in the Wharton class on mergers and acquisition, right? So it is, to what extent is there scope for fulfillment or achievement of specific synergies? How good is the management? You know, what is the macroeconomic environment? What is the competitive landscape like? So those represent the sorts of risks that we would be looking at in advising our clients, and that would be typical for every single financial firm. Goldman has a significant amount of internal intelligence that we work with. We actively have conversations with each of our clients. We actively survey the broader industry landscapes, and we offer insights readily to our clients when we're offering some sort of advisory services. There are other sorts of business offerings that we provide. Of course, you know, you might hear about complex instruments such as swaps. We are involved in those sorts of conversations with clients to try to establish what best suits the needs that they may have, and we will proactively offer them. This is very similar to what every single financial services firm out there tries to do. We try to essentially establish what it is that the client needs and come up with the most ideal solution.
And what do you personally like working on the most right now? Because your career has grown quite a bit in the last few years. Yep. So what is it that you enjoy doing?
Happy to talk about that. So personally, I am more involved in reviews. So we are looking at different types of businesses. Currently, I'm working on a review for one of the portfolios of the firm. And in doing the review, what we do is that we go in and we look at what are the specific risks that may be emerging in the portfolio, to what extent is there adherence to the regulatory environment, to what extent is there adherence to what our internal policies are. And that tends to be my focus. You know, we continue to try to respond to the emerging risk environment. And in doing that, the aim is to try to make sure that we are sufficiently agile and we are responding and being proactive in developing responses for what we would see as potential risks. So as a risk manager, this is essentially what takes up all of my day. And, you know, it is aimed at making sure that the firm remains as strong as it possibly can.
It sounds like a lot to take on from that perspective. Is there anything that jumps out at you that you can talk about as to like certain flags that you notice in deals, and whether like Goldman's participated or not participated, things that would be a pass that Goldman would not participate in, just to give an idea of what are some things that...
I can't communicate what I have seen in terms of flags. What I would say is, though, and this is probably a theme that you'll hear emerging in my responses, we are constantly keeping up to date with what the regulatory environment looks like. The regulators are increasingly focused on making sure that firms across the financial services sector are adequately capitalized, are adequately applying risk policies, and that represents one of the key considerations in everything that I do.
And just from a macro outside of Goldman perspective, I totally appreciate that regulation is important, and you've spent quite a bit of your career now focusing on risk and understanding that. What is your take overall on then competition and smaller entrants when it comes to capitalization? And maybe you don't have a point of it, but just something I'm hearing, and it'd be great to hear your take.
I guess the way I would respond is that the financial services sector is fairly fragmented. There are a lot of big players out there, but then there are a host of smaller players. The realities of it is that that is good for every single customer. I'm challenged to actually respond directly to that. I can't offer a partake is probably what I'd say right now.
No, and that's totally fair, and I appreciate that from that side as well. And when you started back in Jamaica at a Scotiabank, where did you think your career was going to take you? Did you think you'd end up at a Goldman?
I did not. Thanks for that question. I am really grateful with the way my career has progressed. I think that having attended Wharton and having had the ability to interact with people of varying backgrounds, hear the conversation, see what their experiences have been like, benefited from a world-leading faculty. I think that is one of the things that has helped me to be where I'm at. But back in the 90s when I started out, I didn't expect that Goldman was going to be where I would end up. I continue to try to increase my knowledge. This is a space that you will never learn enough. And I think that having gone to Wharton, that was one of the things that helped me. I continue to see where things can head. And I know that there's a whole wide world out there. To the extent that I'm currently focused on risk, I know that there are other different things that I could be exploring, and I continue to be very open to exploring those different avenues.
In your career path, what is one thing that you came across that was really eye-opening to you from a knowledge and learning perspective that kind of shaped and opened your mind as to, you know, this is what I want to do and this is really interesting to me?
Sure. So I left business school and I graduated in May of 2008, and I actually started up with Scotiabank in early July of 2008. Needless to say, you are aware of what happened in September of 2008. It was a very, very interesting period. There was you suddenly saw a risk that had not been thought about in a traditional sense. I know that there were individuals out there that many can say were at the forefront of identification of the risk and remediation of it. But the realities of it is that 2008 experience, the failure of Bear Stearns, what I saw take place with other big firms was something that represented an eye-opening period for me. So yes, the catastrophe was jarring. It opened up my eyes in terms of where risk can come from. And then too, it also introduced me to what represent best practices in being a part of the financial services sector. You ended up seeing how it is that true expert financial managers can respond to situations where there is risk And that has always stuck with me. I think to the extent that we saw the crises with different community banks, I think that I was able to apply what I had seen in 2008 to that as well. And I continue to look out and see where can the risk come from, because if you can identify what risk is going to come, you can adequately mitigate it.
What's your thoughts on a philosophical level on this notion that black swan events are essentially outliers, but we are now living in a world where it seems like these outlier events happen so frequently that they actually become the norm? We just can't predict which our outlier event is going to happen.
Yep.
And like a philosophical question, but it'd be great to have your take on it.
Yeah, so my take on it, and thanks for that question. My take on it is that we are going to probably see more and more black swan events, and that simply has been driven by the scale of the financial services sector, the greater degree of interconnectedness, and the complexity of it all, right? Things are getting a lot more complex, and with that complexity, we actually are seeing situations where previously small events can become much, much bigger. So the idea of a greater frequency of black swan events is something that I think is very, very top of mind. I think that we're likely to see more. But at the same time, I do think that you can't discount the knowledge that has come out of previous experiences with black swan events. And in acknowledging that people have become more expert in terms of responding to these, I think that the impact of these sorts of events is likely to be less. And that's purely my take. I may be 100% wrong, but that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because what I'm hearing is essentially that companies and people should be thinking about, hey, things can happen that are outside of our control. Maybe we have more cash on hand. Maybe we're more conservative in certain areas. Maybe we just accept the fact that we can't control the world and that there is unforeseen things that could happen. And we now just conduct business in a way where we appreciate that something might happen and it might take time for that thing to resolve and things to get back to normal.
100%, Alex. I agree with that. I think that managers across every single industry have to be prepared to respond to events that they hadn't expected. And I think that we are increasingly focused on being able to respond to those events. So using something as basic as being able to maintain liquidity is very core. So I agree with you 100.
And liquidity, just in simple terms, would essentially mean cash on hand to cover operating expenses, assuming that the revenue goes to zero, more or less.
100. And yeah, you're very correct. And we have seen situations like that in very recent times. The COVID pandemic represents an event that was so unusual, and you saw a situation, for example, for a hotelier that would have been routinely benefiting from very predictable cash flows suddenly have to deal with a situation where those cash flows were wiped out overnight. And having the ability to respond to that, having the ability to access lines of credit, having the ability to have conversations with bankers were keys to survival.
And again, another philosophical question that in my head that I'm thinking about, if I'm going to be sitting on 2 years of operating costs and my company has debt, does that then reduce in your mind the amount of debt that companies will be taking on? And maybe what does it do to the debt markets if companies are just sitting on cash that's not earning anything just in case? Because if I'm sitting on a ton of cash, why am I taking on debt? Because I clearly have the ability to use the cash I need to grow the business. So the need for debt kind of goes down in my head when I think about having the ability to, you know, pay my expenses.
Yeah, well, you know, The realities of it is that may well represent the ideal, but you know, I would say that a manager has to be very, very aware of what his needs are for his shareholders, right? So the idea that you're going to just sit on cash and have it there as an emergency fund of sorts is not something that would be necessarily viable. So I get what you're saying about how to manage leverage and versus having liquidity, but I don't think that is something that a manager can. There has to be some very, very clear, you have to manage it, right? You have to manage it. You can't say, hey, I'm going to do away with debt simply because I want to maintain a cash stash such that if things go sideways for 2 years, I am sufficiently covered, because that's not going to be acceptable for your shareholders, right? So there has to be a balance of sorts. So I get that may be the response that one does out of a need to be extremely safe, but in practical terms, I don't think it would work.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking about. How do we balance the philosophical with the practical of, you know, these inherent risks that we believe are going to happen again within the practice of, you know, companies take on debt, if you're going to have to, you know, live out for a few years' time, how do you go about that? So it was just, I was just trying to get your take on what companies maybe or maybe should not be doing or should be thinking about from a risk perspective, and your thoughts on that would be great.
Sure. Sure. So, having a wholesale sort of perspective on it is extremely difficult because it depends totally on the nature of the firm, right? So there may be some firms that are out there that will have to maintain a bigger nest egg of sorts, such that if things go sideways, they are adequately covered. And then there are other firms that you may have a desire on the shareholder for the shareholders to get cash. So that may drive up the amount of debt that is going to be needed. I guess my ability to say, hey, this would be the one solution that I would go with is fairly limited because it varies based on the nature of the company. And that may be where I'm sort of getting hung up, because I can't think of a single sort of approach that's going to work. It depends on the nature of each firm. It depends on what it is that they are doing as business. It depends on the relationship that you have with your bankers. It depends on the demands that you may be getting from your shareholders. I can't come up with a unique solution.
So it essentially depends on the company, because there's a lot of levers a company can pull, such as, you know, reducing the dividends could be one of the first approaches from that perspective.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it may be that let's say this is a company that has an activist shareholder that wants to be able to recoup their investment very quickly, and they are demanding a certain amount of dividends. So it totally depends on the firm. So the management, the executives of the firm, are going to have to take into account each of these different variables.
No, and that's really fair. I was asking because I spent time in the music royalty space, and I got into that because I was starting to think about some more of these Black Swan events and things like that. And essentially, there's no operating costs when it comes to music royalties. You just collect, you know, cash flow royalties. And it's global. It's based on streaming. It's based on consumption, and people are going to keep listening to music in all sorts of times. And even if a Spotify goes bankrupt, well, it's somewhat a fungible project. People will just go to Amazon Music or Apple Music, right? Or mm-hmm. or Pandora. So unless you have all those companies going out of business at the same time, royalties aren't quite secure from that perspective. So I've been thinking a little bit about that from my perspective, and just wanted your take on it as well, because yeah, we have no debt for our fund and no operating costs. So I like that business model.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you have got a terrific business model. yep. But I can't even necessarily come up with a different approach that would work for you. Having no debt works for you guys because you have a fairly predictable revenue stream.
Yeah, exactly. And then diversified across genres and ages of catalog and artists and things like that. So even if one of them gets canceled, you're still fine.
Okay. Yep. Yep, very good.
No, but I just wanted your thoughts overall on that side of things. So what does the future look like for you? I know you just moved to Goldman, you just moved to Dallas here specifically from Houston. Mm-hmm. You're just getting integrated. You said you moved, I think, a day or two ago or a few days ago over to Dallas. So what does the future hold for you? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to being a part of this firm. I have to say that I can't help but be impressed with what the integration has been like thus far. I'm looking forward to the opportunities that may be out there. And absolutely, what the future is looking like is, you know, I want to deepen my expertise in risk management and perhaps ultimately transition into another space. Goldman is a phenomenal firm. I think that there's a lot to learn. It's a very steep learning curve. So what I'm focused on most keenly right now is just making sure that I stay at pace or slightly ahead of pace. And that probably is going to be my near-term goal, getting fully integrated and, you know, contributing what I have to contribute to the firm's success.
I love that approach. Well, thank you for your time. Is there anything that you want to dive into that maybe we didn't dive into?
Oh, no, Alex, I am very grateful for the time that you made for me. I appreciate the questions. You have actually given me some food for thought. Who knows, I may follow up with you in terms of what would be a unique solution for, you know, debt versus holding cash. But all right, thanks so much. Thank you very much for making time. It was, I felt good to be a part of this.
I appreciate it. I hope people get to hear your story. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.